Lunchtime Live with Kira Kelly on News Talk.
On to what I think is fair to say is not just the story of the day here in Ireland, but the story of the day around the globe. US President Donald Trump has vowed to order a military crackdown on protests in the United States, saying he would send troops onto the streets of Washington, D.C., and threatening to deploy soldiers around the country into states to regain control. This comes a week after the death in Minneapolis of George Floyd, an unarmed black man who was pinned down with a knee on his neck by a police officer, leading to the worst civil unrest in the United States in decades. Thousands of people marched through Dublin city centre yesterday as part of a peaceful protest against the killing, and indeed took the knee, as they say, outside the American embassy as well. And we're asking, what is it like to be black in Ireland? What is it like to be always having to battle racism wherever you live, wherever you come from? And we're asking, you know, what can and should be done by way of protest? Obviously, there is difficulties with protesting physically in the light of COVID-19, but is that a reason not to protest at all? 53106 is the text line. I would really like to know what people think about this one. And Hazel Shu is on the line. Hazel, obviously a Green TD. Hazel, you were at the protest yesterday. How did you feel seeing, I suppose, people so moved in a way by what is happening across the water that they felt compelled to take the streets here in Dublin?
I was at the protest. Thanks, Kira. I hope you're well. I was. It was within my 5K, and actually, funny enough, it's close enough to where I bring the little ones to the park every day. So So we wandered down to pay our respects. I think a lot of this is to show solidarity and also to pay respect for a horrific, I would say, incident or accident, but it wasn't an accident by the looks of things. It's a homicide. So lots of people were there, and it was good atmosphere. There were a lot of Gardaí presence as well, and mainly because they wanted to make sure people adhered to social distancing. And overall, it was very peaceful. It was very respectful. And I think it was just to show, again, solidarity and to pay respect for the man that died.
Yes.
For George
Floyd. I'll come to social distancing and all that a little bit later on when we're because I don't want to make that the point. There is issues around that, but I don't want to. That's not the point, though, at the same time.
No, absolutely.
And I don't want to make it that. I was very moved seeing people silently take the knee outside the American embassy. I've always thought that taking the knee is a very respectful, dignified, and in its dignity, there is real power when we've seen various athletes, often black athletes in America, do it at various games and things. I thought it was very moving seeing people do that outside the American embassy.
It was an amazing sight to see. I think it really hit home on how respectful people were, but respectful in as I was saying, a kind of a peaceful manner as well. So to them, taking the knee was a sign of respect, and being able to show that kind of the solidarity. But seeing athletes around the world doing it at the moment, seeing people at protests, and I know a lot of people say, oh, the protesters in US are rioting, but when you see lots of pictures, there are people across US that are taking the knee in front of armed forces at the moment, and it's an incredible sign.
Yeah, I've seen all the rhetoric about the looting and the rioting and everything, and there is looting and there is, but anarchy spawns those things. That's not an excuse for allowing systemic racism and institutionalized racism, in my view, to go unchallenged. And I think there is a social contract between government and police forces and the people. And when that starts to break down, when a lack of equality or fairness is perceived, then the people start behaving badly as well. And that's not necessarily unexpected. We will move on to the social distancing. I'm just looking at my text line, Hazel. A lot of people critical of you and other politicians who attended a protest during a pandemic where I know it was outside, and that does help, obviously, but obviously it was in breach of guidelines and is being referred to in many texts as a super spreader event. What do you say to that?
I think I would say to people who attended or plan to, I think there was another plan of another event, that if it's not within your 5K, I wouldn't recommend it. But I do think if it is within the guidelines and you can go, please go, because it does show solidarity against racism. And we do have a problem across the world with racism. We definitely have a problem in the US. We have a problem here. So, and I fully understand my own mum's cocooning, my in-laws are cocooning because they have underlying issues. And it is important to protect our elderly, but it's also important to show that, as you said yourself, Kira, when people are being oppressed and there's an authoritarian regime, we do need to stand up against it, but do it within the guidelines that you're set out to. And for me, the people who are critical for me, all I can say is they were very much within my guidelines of 5K, and I stuck to it.
Hazel, you are of Asian extraction. You know, I don't want to get into people's ethnicity, but what I'm asking you actually is racism an issue in your life? When you walk around about doing your daily business, when you come and go from places and things, are you aware of among some people, and God, I really do hope it is a tiny minority of people, but are there people that abuse or insult or things like that you or your family?
There is. It's a little uncomfortable subject that's no longer uncomfortable now, because I tend to talk about it because it's important to raise. And I know you've been very good on online advocating against racism. And I get, for myself, I get a lot of trolling online. But apart from online, when I go to the shops with my little one, there has been an incident where she's been called a mongrel. So and it's things like that. It's crap that shouldn't happen. But at the same time, I was just talking to the other half last night that we're lucky. Like in our case, we have a child that's mixed race, and people have said certain things and have been discriminatory towards me or her. But it's not as bad as friends of ours who are in the States who have children of color, because they are couples of color, and they fear for their kids going to school every day, or they fear for when their kids don't come home because they think something happened to them. So though certain incidences here have been more than a bit uncomfortable in so far that they've just been racist. So it's nothing compared to what people are suffering in the States.
And I think some of what's going on in the States is actually interlinked with their gun culture. I do think that, because I think they're very, very quick to pick up guns, and we don't have that here. But as a consequence, black lives are lost to racism. Here, sticks and stones may break your bones, but we're like, here there is abuse and all that. And I'm not minimizing that. I think that is, that disgusts me, I'll be frank with you. But at the same time, I do think that the gun culture in the States has made the lives of black people so much more frightening.
Absolutely. And it's that terror factor, because when you are black over, and I have friends over there who just say, you never know when you're walking down the street if a police kind of stops you, what's going to happen next. Yeah. So because, again, people are quick to draw to that kind of gun culture. But over in Ireland, we like, and this is, I must preface to say, I am not calling all Irish people racist, because I've had that many a times thrown at me saying that, I just like going out calling people Irish people racist. I am not. I'm Irish myself. I think we're a wonderful nation. But there has been a lot of institutional racism in,
I think we have to say, state. Though, some Irish people are racist.
Well,
and maybe you don't want to say it, but I'll say it. There definitely are some Irish people who are racist. And
look at travelling community, they've been completely discriminated against based on their race, on their culture. And if you look at direct provision, so there is racism in the country, and we need to address that, because it is a melting pot, and there will be at some stage. You won't get to the stage of the US anytime soon, but it is a build-up, and the further you are divided, the worse it gets.
Yeah.
So if there is it now, address it. We need to have a very open conversation about issues. And it's great to talk to you about that here. It's great to talk to others as well that think the same way. But it's about talking to people who don't think the same way, yeah, and addressing that and not sweeping it under the carpet.
And I think it probably isn't enough to just not be racist or maybe view yourself as not racist. I think we actually have to tackle racism. I think we actually have to go after it. I don't think we can just say, well, I'm not racist, so I don't have to worry about this. I think there's more that needs to be done than that. Look, thank you for speaking to me today. That is Hazel Shue there, who is Green Party TD, obviously talking about the protest in Dublin yesterday, the Black Lives Matter protest that took place. 53106. We're talking about what it is like to be somebody who is black in Ireland as well. And Karen is on the line. Karen, you are the founder of Origins Ella OE. You were at the protest yesterday. What do you think about all of this conversation?
I think it's really good that, you know, we're finally kind of being given the platform, and also seeing how many Irish people turned up and seeing, like, I guess the country come together for something bigger than us, because I think that this is a worldwide issue that has been swept under the rug, and obviously every country has its own individual issues towards racism, Ireland not being innocent. You know, we still have the issues of ending direct provision. That's a whole that could take up a whole show, I'm sure you know. But yeah, it was really powerful. It was a really powerful place to be at, and just I guess kind of gave us, and I say us, like in a black sense, kind of gave us all a renewed hope to see people standing with us.
Yeah, I do think there was some very moving scenes, and I, as I say, I thought particularly people taking the knee with that kind of silence and dignity outside the American embassy. I do think that kind of protest has power. I do. Are there more protests planned? Because I have to say, Karen, there are a lot of people critical about the idea of that. Not about necessarily, well, maybe it's dressed up as one thing, dressed up as another, but a lot of people critical about those types of protests during the pandemic, as it were. Tell me about that.
Of course. But I think, you know, when the pandemic happened, I myself was kind of, you know, as a black person, I can definitely say I forgot about racism because I was at home so much. You know, I wasn't experiencing it on the street or in the shops, and I'm not going to go into like great detail of because I think there's people there to tell those stories, but I'm not in the position emotionally right now to go into it.
Is that I'm not going to make you say anything you don't want to say, but is that because you find it deeply upsetting? Is that why you don't want to talk about it?
Yeah, of course. It's re-triggering, and I think that there's so many of us that are willing to speak about our personal issues, that I don't want to kind of feel, you know, it kind of feels like you're filling a void, because I think that sometimes it can be unnecessary to, you know, try and prove that racism is real via, and I'm not in any way disregarding people's like lived experiences. I think those, you know, again, there's a place for that, but I don't want to, it's hard to explain. I guess I don't want to feel like, and I don't want anyone else to feel like they need to prove that racism is real, because we all know that it is. So there can sometimes be a bit of a, for lack of like better terms, you know, a trauma porn.
Can I ask you a question? Again, I'm not asking you to give me anecdotes or anything. I really am, and I'm not trying to make you. Are you sometimes afraid to, though, in case there's a backlash? Are you sometimes afraid to say, look, this happened to me or that happened to me? Because in the same way, sometimes women are afraid to speak out about misogyny or sexism that happens to them because they don't want to become sort of a talisman for hate. Is that part of it at all?
No, I understand that kind of that angle completely. For me, it's not fear. I'm not afraid to say those stories. I'm not afraid of the backlash. It's more, I'm tired.
Okay, fair. No, fair, fair point.
And I think it's also. I'm not afraid for sure. I think it's just when you've had those conversations, because I have. You know, grew up in Ireland. Those conversations have happened with Irish friends, just kind of getting them to empathise. But I think that I'm at the stage in my sort of life where I feel like, what's the action behind that, and how can we broaden that conversation?
Yeah, and I know, I listen, and I think that's fair enough. I don't think you need to prostrate yourself in front of people and say, look, this terrible thing happened to me, in order to get people to listen to you. I'm not suggesting that. Are there more protests planned, Karen? I thought today, just looking on social media, that the Blackout Tuesday, all the black screens that appeared certainly in my timelines on Instagram and Facebook and those platforms, I thought that was very powerful. It was like a series of you know, the opposite of people when they put up those times when candles go up and people put up a light out into the ether. But this was the opposite. It was putting up a blackness, but it was very somber and sober. What do you say about people who say the type of physical protest in a time of a pandemic where physical distancing is very difficult is not appropriate?
I don't really know what to say to them, because I feel like, you know, if you don't feel like it's safe enough for you to go out and physically protest, there are other ways of protesting, and we all have a voice, and I think we all need to use it, especially at this time. It's sad that, you know, racism is only kind of being brought up via the deaths of innocent people, because it has always been prevalent and it's always been happening. But look, I feel like now is the time for people to stand up and to use their voice in any way they can. And if that's, you know, joining, you know, in a space, you know, space doesn't necessarily have to be physical space. It can be virtual space.
Yeah.
It can be texting your friend who, you know, said a dodgy thing. These are very simple steps as well. I think sometimes we can give it too much complexity, where having conversations about racism and protests, like forms of protest, can be done in really easy and really simple ways.
Yeah. So I do think it's important that allies come forward, in the same way allies are needed for all kinds of movements. But I agree with you. Thank you for speaking to me, Karen. Thank you for that indeed. Karen is the founder of Origins Ella, and talking there after Karen, I have Ellie Kasumbe. Ellie, we've talked before. Obviously, you are a direct provision activist and a social Democrat local election candidate for Dublin North. Are you following all of this stuff in the States, and how do we, to be honest, I find it depressing and sickening and kind of disturbing seeing how badly people can treat each other. But when we look at what's going on over there, is it reflected in life here for people who are black?
Thank you, Kira, for having me.
I'm delighted.
This is a very, very hard time and very confusing. Like, I'm so confused because I've been following everything that's going on. And, you know, like, we have all the time on our clock. So it actually also makes it easier to understand, and even you yourself as a person that goes through it every day, to go deeper and try to understand where this problem is. Yes, Kira, it really does reflect even here back home, because I think, like, black people, not only, I should say, like, I'll use black people because this is very true. People of that color, they experience way more of racism depending on every aspect of life, like accent, the color of their skin, the way they behave.
They're judged more harshly, aren't they?
Horrifically. You know, like, and this even actually makes you to actually, like, go way beyond your eyes to see, like, why. Because if you can follow, like, I've been following, I don't even want to actually talk about the traumatic incident that led to that man's passing. But if you can read everything, if you were able to watch what happened to that guy, you can actually tell that this color, I wish if I can bridge it to white, because there is nothing that can justify that. But it's just the color of the skin.
No, I know. And I think it was Haile Selassie said that there will always be racism until a colour of a man's skin is of no more importance than the colour of his eyes. I don't know how we get beyond it, because people are drawn towards picking on difference or something. It's something in humans, and it's dreadful. And I mean, I didn't watch the George Floyd video, not because I wasn't interested. Mm-hmm. I couldn't face seeing it. I thought, I don't want to see a man being killed before my eyes. I can't look at that. I looked at the stills and everything, and I'm disgusted by it. But it's too much that people can have so dehumanized each other. It's dreadful.
It is too much. And this is comes down to just the fear of unknown. You know, like, I think, like, I'm hating to actually speak like this to you today, because, like, 80-90% of my friends are white people, are white Irish, which I've actually made great friends. And, like, if I turn out today, I rush to my white friend. If I turn out today, I rush to Michelle. I rush to Max. And we are people that we look at each other, like, Max and Ellie, Michelle and Ellie, and we share the same privileges that they share and I share to them. And it's even very unfortunate for me to be speaking like that. But this is the reality. I am one in thousands of people that I'm privileged to be in that corner whereby I can say I'm comfortable. And today, I don't want to feel comfortable. And I also want my friends not to feel comfortable. My friends
are
have
to pull up. Are you angry, Ellie? Are you angry that this conversation goes round and around and around? And we've been talking about, I mean, Rodney King, the riots post the killing of Rodney King. You know, America flares up every few years consumed by this racist divide. Are you angry it's still going on?
I am very angry. I am very upset. But I want my anger, I want to pray that my anger should base and focus towards something that's going to bring something, that's going to bring something that's constructive. That's how I've weighed myself in this world, that I would take my anger to actually use that anger to bring something positive to that situation that's affecting us. And I feel like if America is not going to reach on a turning point now, they'll never get to the turning point. And also,
Trump in the White House is not going to improve matters.
It's crazy.
No, it's dreadful.
But you know, like, Tia, what you have to understand, there is a time and there is a point where a man can say, enough is enough. It might not be enough now. We might look at him like, okay, he's somebody that he feels like is above everyone and he's above the law. But when a man comes and says enough is enough, it will come a day when it's going to be his day. And that day is going to land. It's not today, it's not tomorrow, but it's any time soon.
Thank you, Ellie. Thank you for speaking to us on this text coming in. Kira, I work in a large pharma factory. My colleagues are all white, Irish and very racist. I hear awful things said. They often spend our breaks complaining about minorities in Ireland. Obviously, I can't come on air to say this. We have a diversity and an inclusion movement at work, but that seems to be an agenda for feminists and LGBT. I don't know what to say about any of that. And Deborah is on the line. Deborah, did you feel encouraged by seeing people protesting yesterday? Do you think it might make people think around the whole issue of racism in Ireland more? You're very welcome, by the way. Nice to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, Kira. I do think it has been very encouraging in a lot of ways, because I think, like, for me as a Black person, when I see these things happening, it kind of, I suppose, is just that kind of tiny bit of reassurance that this is one less difficult conversation that I might have to have, or this is one less person that I might have to spend a lot of emotional energy trying to educate on a topic that's obviously so difficult and so close to home. So it has been really nice to see. I suppose it's just...
Do you find, Deborah, it's very topical at the moment. Everybody is flooding social media with you know, Blackout Tuesday and Black Lives Matter and obviously the big protest and America's burning. And there's a huge groundswell around this at the moment. But not at the moment. In normal times, when this hasn't come to the head the way it has at the minute, is it hard to talk about racism to people? Do people shut off or get disinterested, or are people open to you having that conversation?
I think it is, honestly, I can't mince my words and say that it's not hard. I've been telling my friends for the last week that I feel as if I've been walking around with like a lead weight in my stomach. And it's a really heavy cross to bear. And then...
Is this a lead weight since George Floyd was murdered?
Right, yeah. And that's nearly a week ago now, I think, a full 7 days, where you can imagine that that's a lot for a person to carry around. And I'm not the only one feeling it, you know, there's millions of people all across the world feeling
and,
it.
And truthfully, and I think it's a good thing, and I'm not trying to make this about white people, I'm really not, but people like me who aren't obviously on the receiving end of racism here, I feel sickened by it. Like I think an awful lot of people are your allies, and they don't have to actually walk in your shoes to know that that was wrong and this is a wrong. I think that's known by lots of us.
And I do agree with that. I just think allyship has to be more of a verb than an adjective. I mean, it's one thing to say.
I like it. Thank you. That's very well put.
I appreciate going that bit further, because it's one thing to feel outraged, but I think the most important thing at the moment is to channel that outrage into something productive, whether that's going to protests or signing petitions or reaching out to your Black friends to ask how you can support them, because at the end of the day, it's really all about putting your money where your mouth is.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, you said the thing about feeling outraged yourself. And I think that's kind of a universal feeling right now for most decent human beings, non-racist human beings. But I suppose it's also important to acknowledge that there's always that kind of like extra layer of pain.
And thank you. Thank you for coming on and speaking to me. I really do appreciate it, Deborah. And Deborah has said it beautifully there. You know, being an ally is about being, that's a verb. It's an action. It's not an adjective. There's stuff we need to do. Text Kira, I'm a Black woman from the west of Ireland, and I've been so angry seeing social media posts talking about how there is no racism or police brutality in Ireland. The actual issue with, I'm only laughing because I think, how can anyone say there's no racism in Ireland? It's nonsense. The actual issue with Ireland and racism is that it's not as overt as America. It's disguised, it's subtle, it's systemic, and it's structural. The microaggressions I receive on a daily basis are now part of my life. As a Black educator, it's very rare. I see anyone that looks like me on the staff. Racism in Ireland is nothing new and is part of my daily life, and seeing a lot of my white friends speaking up now is actually bittersweet, because it shows that for years you've willfully ignored years of this bullshit. I wish right now all I had to worry about was the climate and COVID-19, but the colour of my skin means right now that they are the least of my worries. I think we'll take a break on that.
Lunchtime Live with Kira Kelly on News Talk.
Earlier on in the programme, we did speak about, I suppose, what has consumed the world, the issue of racism, particularly in America, particularly at the hands of police against Black men. And this is all in the wake of the murder, which many people watched the video of George Floyd at the hands of a police officer who knelt on his neck until the man died of asphyxiation. Horrific stuff, really. And I'm joined on the line now by Claire. Claire, you are from Ireland, but you live in the US. You live in San Francisco, and you are married to an African-American man. So you, I've no doubt, are somebody who is acutely aware and probably acutely concerned about the racism that seems to run unchecked in America in particular. Tell us what it's like over there at the moment. You're very welcome, and thank you for talking to me.
Thanks a million, Kira. Glad to be on. And can I just say, I'm so glad that you started that statement by saying he was murdered, that George Floyd was murdered. I've been listening to the news a lot, and people have been saying killed, and I keep on elbowing my husband, who's much quieter and a much nicer person than I am. And I'm like, Jesus, he was not killed. He was murdered.
I said it deliberately, to be honest. It wasn't an accident.
Thank you. And this is why I'm talking to you, because you really understand. And I feel, you know, I'm originally from Clontarf. I've been living over here 25 years and, you know, married my husband in 2003. And so I consider myself, I definitely would be on the liberal side of things. And but I suppose I find myself, and that's why I reached out, just so heartbroken, but not shocked at what's happening. Not shocked, because it's been going on in America for over 400 years, systemic racism, that's really hard to understand. And I wanted to just share with my country, with my countrymen, because we have been through so much of this type of things with the 500 years of oppression that we had, that out of any country in the world, I feel we should be the most understanding. And I want people to think about what it means on a day-to-day
life. No dogs, no blacks, no Irish was the sign that used to exist in the UK.
Exactly. And look, we've moved on a long way from that. But in America, it has not moved on. And unfortunately, what's happened in this country is that there was a very veiled undercurrent of racism for such a long time. But of course, the orange monster, as I like to call him, has really brought that to the forefront by his divisiveness and how he leads with anger and he leads with hate, right? But to come back to your original question, which is, what is the impact on the day-to-day life? And then, like I say, my husband would be, you know, he's a professional man. He is a good man. We live in a nice middle class, I suppose, a liberal area living right outside San Francisco. But even in our world, we see things happening. And I was talking to Ross, one of your assistant programmers there earlier yesterday morning. And what I was saying is last week, because of COVID, you know, we're all cocooning at home and we were out for a walk. Now, I walk really fast. You'd love me. I'm on the 100 days of walking. I walk really fast. So my husband's always behind me. He's got his headset on. I'm just listening to the birds and doing my own prayer thinking. Anyway, so away we're walking and a guy is walking towards me and he kind of starts looking at me and he's like, are you okay? And I'm thinking, Jesus, this is a madman walking down the street. And I said, ah, God love him. Sure, there's nothing wrong with him. I said, oh, yeah, I'm fine. Thanks, lovely. And I just keep on walking. And then after I go by, I was a bit worried about this man approaching me. I said to Declan, do you think he was all right? And Declan said, Claire, he was worried that I was following you.
Oh, God.
My husband was walking 10 paces behind me. And that's what happened, right? And look, that's nothing compared to what happens to other Black people in America on a daily basis. And this is what people don't understand.
Claire,
when you just hear these...
Can you relate? Because I've seen a huge amount of stuff on online now on people's, you know, Facebooks and things like this where where people are sharing stories. Like there was an African-American man, a Black guy, he said he won't walk in his neighbourhood. He also lives in a nice suburban, looks very pretty, picket with his daughter or his dog because that way he's considered safe. And if he's walking without his dog and his daughter, he's dangerous and all that. There was a college professor who was stopped when he was actually just on his way to work and he was detained with guns pointing at him and
because of his lovely fluffy hat that
that one. And there was another thing posted online that I saw of a woman had posted it. She saw a Black man being detained and it was terrifying, to be honest, looking at it. There was about 8 police cars around this one Black man who was on his knees with his hands above his head, and he was saying very calmly, I'm not armed. There must have been 15 guns pointed on this man who wasn't resisting anything. And I'm looking at that and I'm going, what, America, what has gone wrong? That people who are, by virtue of the colour of their skin, minding their own business, walking around the place, can have armed weapons pointed at them repeatedly. It's very hard to get our head around here because we don't have a gun culture either.
Exactly. And so like a few kind of follow on points on that. So for example, where we live, it happens minimally, especially because my husband is obviously a professional man and he dresses and looks accordingly. Okay, let's be clear on that. Like there's different levels of systemic
racism. So he's in a blazer or a suit or some such thing.
How you dress.
Okay.
Exactly. As opposed to the kids with the low jeans and the black hoodies, right? So there is a difference. But the point is, remember the way you said there about the guy that was a college professor and then, of course, the guy who's the bird watcher in New York, and then there's my husband who's a professional. The fact that we have to even qualify and say, oh, but sure, they went to Harvard. Oh, they have an MBA. Oh, they're this. It shouldn't matter whether the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker should not matter. And that is where the problem is.
Well, exactly. Well, I'm thinking about what you said about the kids and the hoodies that they get. I'm thinking I have kids. Yeah. My kids wear hoodies. If they were Black, they would be perceived in their hoodies differently to being white in their hoodies.
Exactly. Walking down the road, the same person walking down the road wearing the same thing is going to be treated differently if they're Black and if they're white. And that is the inherent problem. I was, you know, talking to somebody the other day and they were saying, you know, it's terrible. I have to explain this to them. Absolutely. If somebody is a looter, somebody does a crime, they should, you know, have a consequence to it. But what happens, and this goes back to a lot to law enforcement too, there are over 18,000 different law enforcement agencies in this country. And as I was explaining this to my husband, he was like, well, you know, how can they change things? I said, look, if you were looking, and somebody else made this point about a pilot, right? When you hire pilots, you don't say, well, some are good pilots, some are bad. They might crash you into the mountain. No, they do psychological evaluations. They background check all these people. They make sure they're okay for the job. But in America, it doesn't really happen. So you have 18,000 separate law enforcement agencies with very little guidance on how to do things in the right way and how to hire people. Look at Minneapolis. Minneapolis, 98% of the law enforcement there are white. 90% of them do not even live in Minneapolis. They live in outer areas, which would be not as liberal as the wonderful city of Minneapolis. Additionally, their police union chief is a known white supremacist. So literally, and again, I was trying to say this to Ross, he was saying, how do you see it coming out of this? And I said, I don't know, because it's just so deep. The only thing people can do is try and get out and vote for change.
And that is a real difficulty, though, because, I mean, and people did, there was a perception that they voted for change when they voted for Barack Obama. But Trump's rhetoric, from this distance at least, looks incredibly divisive. Like, he focuses on Antifa, he focuses on the looters. You know, what they had to take down the tweet that said, when the looting starts, the shooting starts. He is a man who doesn't seem to mind, and in fact seems to court creating division and anger. That seems to be his,
yes. He promotes it. Yes, and he does it for his own end, right? So let's make no mistake. There are obviously the protests that are going on right now, again, for somebody who says they don't get it, you just need to take a long look at yourself and start to read the history books, right? The protests are valid. What happens, and Trevor Noah put this better than anybody, I think, basically we sign a social contract. And when that social contract has been broken again and again and again, why should we as Black people follow that social contract? Because it's not working for us. So I get the protests. However, there are people from Antifa. There are people who are white supremacists, posing as Antifa, by the way. This is proven, who are going out there and causing violence. And does Donald Trump say anything about these white supremacists, just like he didn't in Charlotte, right?
Yeah.
So, yes,
fine
stoking violence.
Fine people and all the
usual. He's doing this for his own needs. And look, at the end of the day, the only reason he's doing this, it's all calculated. You know, he's a reality show unto himself. And he's doing this because he's looking to get, to, first of all, scare people, because he thinks a wartime president, if I'm the person who's taking care of this war, hey, this is a new war, all these riots, I'll turn it into a war. Fantastic. Then I won't get voted out. And I'm not going to mention white supremacists because my people will stay with me, because that's who a lot of these people, not all, yeah, but a lot of these people are. So he is making things worse every single day. And
one,
you know, that glorified
photo
op yesterday was an abomination.
You spoke to Ross, our researcher, about, Claire, was the fact that you had to travel to Tucson to care for a relative. But your husband couldn't go by himself, you said, and travel across states alone as a Black man, because that would create...
It's not that he
or that it would be a risk to him to do so.
It's that I was scared. He would be happy enough to go by himself, right? Because, again, he's from the ilk that I'm doing nothing wrong, everything will be okay. But I am like any other wife, any other mother, any other sister who sees the Black man. And I'm not Black. I'm a very white, freckly person. But
like every other Irish person.
I walk beside the shoes. Exactly. God love the freckles. I walk beside the shoes of a person as Black, and I cannot ever claim to understand what they go through. But I have fear when I'm not with my husband all the time.
Do you feel that?
That is what, and this almost brings me to tears when I think
of
other
wonderful
families around this country.
Do you feel that you, part of your job now, Claire, is to protect your husband with your whiteness?
Yes,
do you know what I'm asking? I don't know if I'm asking that in a really awkward,
exactly,
bad way.
No, you're not. And like, he'd be like mortified to even say that.
Yeah, but because,
you know
what I'm asking you.
He's a beautiful, big, strong man. But yeah, absolutely. I do feel like I want to be his bodyguard right now. I want to be with him when we go places.
Terrific.
Because just in case, you know.
Yeah.
And even on the drive to Tucson, you know, you're driving through parts. It was a long drive, by the way. Dear God. If when people complain about the drive to Galway or Kerry, please don't. It's a very long drive. When we, you know, even as we're driving, you're stopping at different places and you're seeing people, and you know that they're looking at you if you were a Black person in a different way, because you're driving in parts of America that are not as liberal, that are not as open and loving as they should be.
I do believe
it really
that is frightening.
Is.
Have you ever thought, because obviously you are an Irish citizen, have you ever thought yourself and your husband about moving home to here, where I know, and I'm not suggesting
actually,
that racism doesn't exist, but
no,
but you don't get shot here.
Yeah, no, you do not get shot, you know, and that's another thing. I'm not very involved, but somewhat involved in the Gifford Law Centre to prevent gun violence for that very reason over here. But yes, we actually are considering it, and we've actually started the process to look at houses right before COVID. But we are planning on retiring in Ireland and, if possible, getting over there sooner. And we go home to Ireland regularly. So, and obviously I listen to News Talk every day. My husband listens to Liveline, but, you know, that's a whole other story. God bless him. We keep telling him we revoke his password, although he does love to say, wash your hands.
That's fair enough.
But yes, we are actually, we're strongly considering it because of the climate. And
yeah.
We love Ireland, you know, we go home all the time. We were just home at Christmas. We were planning to go home after St. Patrick's Day. But sure, look, please God, yeah, after the virus ends, we'll go.
Yeah.
But, you know, a point I wanted to make too about the gun piece of this, I think that's a huge part. And I'm just going to leave you with this, Ciara, because I'm sure you want to move on to other things. But I was at the Giffords Mall Centre annual dinner. It was the 15th anniversary about 2 years ago. It was great. We had Hillary Clinton was there. Gabby Gifford was there. And I'm not sure if you guys know who she is. She's the congressman who got shot in Tucson, ironically enough. Total coincidence that I'm here. But anyway, we got involved in that centre because our friend's 9-year-old niece was attending a meet and greet, like, you know, our ministers would do at home, yeah, with local people outside a shopping centre. And a guy came along and shot the congresswoman and shot some people. And
oh,
our friend's 9-year-old niece, Christina Taylor Green, got shot and killed.
Oh,
terrible,
wow.
awful abomination. But listen, at this anniversary, it had just happened after the Parkland shootings in Florida. And so that we happened to be sitting at a table with some of the children from Parkland and their mother. And there was also an African-American teenager and his mother from the south side of Chicago.
Okay.
And the teenagers from Florida were just talking about how, you know, we're scared to go to school now and all this thing, you know, diving under the desks for, you know, to prepare for shooters come in. And then when this young man, whose brother had actually got killed down on the streets of Chicago, south side of Chicago, where Michelle Obama is from, the wonderful Michelle Obama, this young man, his brother was shot. Anyway, he goes up and talks to this audience of probably 2,000 people. It was mainly lawyers and other people who are affiliated with the association, which is a really good one about smart gun laws.
Okay.
Anyway, this young man got up there and he said, listening to the others talk about how scared they are to go to school, can I tell you that when I practically run to school every day, school is my sanctuary where I am not scared. And I just want to put that in perspective, that even given the school shootings, this child, a 16-year-old child, wise beyond his years, is saying that
that's
when I run
space.
To school, that's my sanctuary. Now, that'll tell you the state of this country. And by the way, there are wonderful, amazing
people. Of course there are. No, you know,
and
that,
as you know,
that's
just
true.
Like in Ireland,
you go anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Look, Claire,
yeah,
thank you very much for sharing with us. And I wish you all the best. And if your husband and yourself do move here, we would be delighted to have you, the pair of you. And thank you for coming on and talking about what life is like as an Irish woman married to an African-American in America at the moment. Doesn't want him to go places by himself. She's afraid her whiteness protects him. I mean, saying something, isn't it? 53106. Stephanie is on the line from Drogheda. Stephanie, you have experienced racism. Do you think we need to talk more about it in this country as well? We were obviously talking about America there, but racism in Ireland.
Hi, Ciara. First of all, I want to say thank you for your show and for yourself. You're just so honest and so impartial, and I think we really appreciate that.
Well, do you know what is making me a bit sad? The amount of people who are thanking me for talking about this as if I'm doing them a favour. I'm not. I'm not. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This needs to be spoken about and is valid that we would discuss it. I feel bad that people feel they need to thank anyone for talking about something this important.
I find that all the black people I know will thank someone just because it's not talked about enough. It's swept under the carpet,
yeah,
brushed off as if it's not an issue, but it is an issue. I wanted to share an experience that I had, and it was 2017, actually. So I was collecting my niece, who is a black Irish,
yeah,
from her babysitter's, and I had parked right in front of her babysitter's house. Now, I wasn't blocking this particular man's driveway. So anyways, I collected her. She was going to the car. He got out of his car because he was coming back from work, and he said that, you know, I had no respect for the estate. And I mentioned to him, you know, I am sorry that, you know, I'm parked here. I will move. And I also that I live in this estate. I apologized to my niece's babysitter because, you know, she lived right beside him. And as I was getting in the car, now this is the short version, and as I was getting in the car, he was threatening to call the guards. And I said, call the guards. I'm not doing anything illegal. I'm not doing anything wrong.
He wanted to call the guards because he didn't like how you were parked. Is that
how it was parked, okay. Not in front of his house. Yeah.
Okay.
Not how it was parked because of the colour of my skin.
Yeah, and I believe you. Yeah, totally.
As I was getting in the car, he said, you know, he was mentioning things, he was ranting, he was raving in front of his two little daughters who probably were like 5 and 3 at the time. And he was saying, we're stealing all the jobs.
Jesus.
Yeah. And as I was getting in the car, he then says, go back to the cotton farms. So
I nearly cursed on air. Oh, okay.
I feel like crying actually. I haven't thought about this in a while. I got in the car, I drove home, and at that time I actually went on Snapchat and I just put it there to all my friends. You know, a lot of people did say sorry and things like that, but that's what I mean by there's racism in Ireland. Just because people don't want to talk about it or you don't hear about it, it happens. You know, I mean, my family members have gone through things so similar. My mum is a nurse midwife and she has been for I think over 30 years, and she's cried at work in the bathroom because her colleagues have racially abused her.
Her colleagues,
yeah. This was years ago now, and it doesn't happen anymore because, you know, she's kind of built herself up and gained that level of respect. But when she first arrived, there was no respect. There was no...
When did your mum arrive? Did she arrive from a different country to Ireland?
Yeah, we came from the Netherlands, so we're all Dutch.
Yeah.
But we're black.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's the issue. And we arrived here in 2004. So I've been here for 16 years. But that doesn't mean that the colour of my skin is just, people just look at it and just go, yeah, no, they're not meant to be here. My little sister has had experiences on the bus in Dublin and people saying, this is not Africa, you have to wait, or, you know, saying you're pretty for a black girl. things like that, like pretty for a black girl, what does that mean?
I don't know what that means. It just means something offensive. I can't even imagine what
means
it means.
That
really,
black people aren't supposed to be pretty, you know. And that's what I mean by it's not just racism. It's a dehumanization of black people. You know, I've listened to a lot of talks about this, and during the World War times and when they first had slaves, they would have human zoos and put little girls and women in those zoos, and they'd parade around for people to watch. And these things have just kind of, they're implicit memory. So they stay with us, even though we haven't experienced it, you know. And that's why people say Black Lives Matter. It's not because all lives don't matter. It's because people treat Black lives like they don't matter.
But you know what? When people say all lives matter, and I've heard that, it's a bit of whataboutery in my view, but all lives will never matter until Black lives matter. If we discount Black lives, how can all lives matter? Black lives are part of all lives. Like, you can't ignore what's happening. And there was a very good thing I saw, I saw it on Instagram or something, and somebody said, saying all lives matter is it like saying all houses matter to the fire brigade and saying they have to all wash every house down with water. Only the house that's on fire needs the fire brigade.
It needs,
so it doesn't matter.
It needs, needs the attention.
Yeah.
And that's exactly it. And you know, just because we're not getting shot on the streets here, and I am thankful for that. And I know, I say, you know, most Irish people, they're so welcoming. You know, they're so hospitable, most of them. But
most
there is
them.
A percentage that are racist and pretend like they're not, and you know, just saying
I'm not racist, but that stuff.
Or you know, we've often experienced this. Where are you from? And we say, oh, I live
from Drogheda. I know.
Where are you really from? And then because I am a Dutch person, I say, oh, I'm from the Netherlands. And then they're like, no, where are you originally from?
It's like asking me where my great great granny was from or something.
Yeah,
I don't even know is the answer, to be honest. Probably Dublin,
but
not
sure. My heritage is Nigerian, but I was born and raised in Europe. Yeah. I've been to Nigeria 3 times in my 26 years.
So Nigeria is not home.
No, it's not home for me at all. You know, it's where my mom was born and raised, and then she moved to Europe when she was young, and she had most of her kids here. So asking me where I'm originally from, it's a stab.
You're from the Netherlands. And
I'm
you
from the Netherlands,
Look, thank you, Stephanie, and thank you for speaking to me. And I don't know what, I don't have enough words to offer in terms of all this. But I am sorry. I am sorry that people are on the receiving end of this ignorance, which is what it is. But thank you for speaking to us there. That's Stephanie from Drogheda. Kira, I am black. I am married to a white Irish man. I have spent 10 years having to prove myself to my in-laws. They have affected me mentally for years with their racist comments. Things are bearable at the moment, but I know they are still waiting for me to fail, so they can say, I told you so. I do not trust them, and I try and focus on minding myself and my husband and our kids. Racism is real in Ireland, and I don't want to talk about it on air. I know only a small amount about this, and I'm not going to pretend otherwise, because I don't think any white person really can know what it is to be judged and judged harshly because of the colour of their skin. But back in the 60s, when my parents were young, my dad's sister, and white Irish living in Dublin, married a black Nigerian man who was studying law in Trinity, who is my uncle. He's passed away subsequently. My uncle Mike, who is Nigerian, and I have black cousins, and they're not pale, they're dark. I have black cousins, and I've always had black first cousins. And they didn't live in Ireland after a while because it wasn't a very warm or welcoming place to a mixed race family. And racism is real, and it messes up people's lives, and it is something we need to root out and we need to address. And it is a form of ignorance, and it is a form of fear and hatred. And I don't have the answers to any of this, but I think it's very important we hear people's voices. And if you are an ally, and I would hope that most of us are an ally, you would speak out about it. 53106, let's take a break.
Lunchtime Live with Kira Kelly on News Talk.